Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along Gary Baker and a whole bunch of other people with me in studio, including Cal Carson back off the ice and with us, and Kasten Thomas as well. We're going to be talking about what has been a disastrous week in technology for a lot of people, starting with the city of Atlanta and going down to Uber and Best Buy and even Facebook. We're doing a tech roundtable on those subjects coming up. I don't know if it's something you remember, a program was That Was the Week That Was. Do you remember from TV and they would talk about different things? Well, this was the week for disasters in the tech world. And it all began with Monday morning when folks showed up at the office in the city of Atlanta and they couldn't go anywhere on their computers because they had been hit by ransomware. That was the big story on Monday. That was starting things. We'll talk about the Uber accident as well. But how does a city get clobbered by ransomware? I mean, we think that there would be all sorts of barriers to that kind of thing being allowed to happen in a city.
You'd think that, but the problem is, and if you look at whether it's the Equifax or Target or Anthem, all of these hacks were not sophisticated. It was just organizations not doing what they need to do.
What was it that hit Atlanta? I understand it had been around for a while, this particular.
Yeah, the ransomware was not distributed by email in the way that most people think of ransomware. This is actually what's called a backdoor, and it's a backdoor called SamSam. And I've researched and tried to find out where SamSam originated, and I'm pretty good with an internet search. I can't find out where it came from and what organization created it.
Gary, have you heard at all?
No, but, you know, it's really not, it's really understandable. It's not difficult to understand at all. You know, when you look at local governments, even the city the size of Atlanta, they don't have a lot of money to put into technology. They're not paying as much attention to technology as, you know, as a private industry, you know, private company and they certainly don't pay attention to security. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but they are not the only city that's going pretty unprotected right now. And so I would expect others to do as well.
Well, guys,
And to answer your question, I really don't know where it's come from.
Yeah, okay.
And isn't it true, I mean, when it's all said and done, you can't, I mean, any place is still vulnerable because you don't know where every hole is until it's discovered, correct?
Well, that's true, but this is a known hole that's been around for 2 years. It's specifically, and there are technical reasons based on software and systems that certain industries use, but the targeted systems that SamSam exploits are hospitals, generally local government, and manufacturing. Those are, and it's probably not appropriate to talk about exactly what that is over the air, but it is a specific well-known attack. The Colorado Department of Transportation got hit back in February with 2,000 devices. The numbers I've seen don't add up with Atlanta, what's being reported. Yeah. I mean, the math just doesn't work. But if I do the math, less than 10 computers were affected. But they were computers that control payroll and websites that constituents and the citizens of Atlanta use. So it has a very highly visible impact.
Well, one thing for sure, after it happens, you can bet it's going to get fixed, and they're going to be more cognizant of what's going on, right?
Man, the quotes I've heard from the city officials from Atlanta just don't give me any faith that they even understand. And we talk about money being spent, but I've been encouraging cities and schools, all organizations for that matter, just to have a plan and a decision-making process that says, if we do get hit, here's the amount we're willing to pay based on how many computers or what systems have been affected. That way you're not making decisions under stress. And personally, about a year and a half ago, my company actually sponsored a free seminar, you know, free breakfast, everything, because we wanted to do something for the schools and local governments. We sent out 650 invitations to 200-something schools, local governments, counties. Right. We had 12 people show up.
Ouch. Ouch.
Because they don't take security seriously.
It's not a priority. I think everybody takes it seriously, but then opening your wallet, it's just not happening.
Guys, I thought that the general principle was, you know, we don't negotiate with, you know, hostage takers, you know, so we don't pay for it. Sounds like you're saying that a lot of companies need to cough up.
If I got to make payroll and something breaks, even when everything is done right, sometimes things go bump in the night, you may have to come to a decision where you say, we can either have all the employees not showing up to do the city services, or we pay $50,000 and fix this once and for all.
Well, couldn't you do something that would be less expensive, for lack of a better way, and just have, you know, a couple of systems basically mothballed, but up to date, so in case they get hit, you take the infected ones off, you put on the appropriate protections on the other ones and slip them in place, and you're back in business?
If the city of Atlanta had just installed the free upgrades in the last 12 months, it wouldn't have happened. Well, I can't say it wouldn't have happened, but the chance, the known problems, and hundreds of organizations have been hit for hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, with this Sam ransomware.
And it almost seems like, I'm sorry, Gary, you're going to say something?
No, I was just going to say, and, you know, to Cashin's point, it is not new. We all know about it. And it is too bad that they're not doing anything about it, but they don't take security seriously.
And it seems like that's just going to encourage these people who are doing this even more. Hey, when we come back, let's talk about what became one of the biggest topics at the beginning of the week was the Uber accident that took the life of a young woman down in Arizona. Welcome to the Internet Advisor First Hour. This is good. Our tech roundtable, talking about some of the things that have been happening this week. With me in studio, let me reintroduce everybody, Gary Baker, down in Fort Lauderdale on the aboard the Shared Adventure. How are you doing, Gary?
I'm doing great. Wonderful day.
Conditions good down there in Fort Lauderdale?
They certainly are. It's over 80 degrees and pleasant, no humidity. And calm here in the marina.
We're climbing. We're about halfway there in terms of temperature. So we're hoping that spring will stay the course, and by Easter, at the end of the week, will arise from the shattered ruins of winter. Also with us, Cal Carson, back again. Good to have you here, mister.
Good to be here. I tell you what, I've been on ice for about 3 weeks, and I am glad that I'm sitting in a nice warm place, because I enjoy the sport immensely, but it It's a bit chilly some weekends.
You work with
I'm with U.S. figure skating.
Right, right.
So when you say you were on ice, literally, you were on ice.
Exactly.
Well, actually, I'm right rinkside. Skaters are on ice, but it's close enough.
It's close.
You're inside a building wearing a coat.
Oh, Lord. Kasten Thomas also with us, man who founded a company called Interworks. And a security company that kind of looks into the future with businesses to see what the possibilities are for protecting ourselves.
And the stuff we're talking about, I am fired up to be here.
Good to have you here. Okay, Gary, we're talking about this Uber accident that happened. And let me see if I can push some of the stuff aside. It's been established in terms by the police there, apparently in Tempe, Arizona, that in terms of responsibility for the death of the young woman, that Uber doesn't bear responsibility for it because this young woman jumped out, you know, crosswalked essentially in the dark, dressed darkly, into a lane where cars were going very fast. And so, I mean, some of that has, I'm sure there are going to be lawsuits galore. Everything from a driver who was, you know, sitting there, supposed to be, you know, taking care of things and not at all, supposed to look like they were looking at their phone. The issue for me is the technology behind Uber. That is what failed. And from what I've read, and to see what you guys think about this, the real issue is that Uber has been trying to catch up with Waymo, which is Google, and they're still not there yet. But they, in the process of trying to get there, they have shortcutted some of the technology so that they aren't using some of the radars, for instance, if they could, that would have picked up that woman on the curbside. Now, am I being unfair?
So I think the problem really is there's nothing you can do about stupidity. And if you're going to jump out in front of a fast-moving car, there's a chance you're going to get hit.
Yep.
So no matter who was driving, no matter what was happening, if you step out in front of a fast-moving car, guess what?
Roadkill.
Yeah, I look at it from the standpoint of pure physics. If I've got a one-ton, massive, high-performance metal, plastic, vinyl, and rubber, and it's moving at 20 miles an hour,
yeah,
it takes a certain distance to stop. Mm. And it doesn't matter how much you can predict or see. You can't stop in a certain distance.
If I were the insurance company that was insuring the vehicle, Uber's insurance company, do you think they could sue the woman's estate for being stupid and denting their car?
Wasn't she homeless?
Oh, jeez.
Well, you know, I don't see. But I
heard she was homeless.
I don't know.
This goes back to what I believe, and it's a hard fact, and it's kind of a tough pill to shove at the world. But as we go forward toward these autonomous cars, mm-hmm. it's going to come with some level of collateral damage. This is not going to just happen, and there's not going to be any fatalities or anything like that. This is part of the development of that actual type of architecture in electronics to be able to work with. It's not going to come completely free. When we tried to go to the moon, we did every possible safety precaution and we had issues and we lost some people in the process.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Technology comes with losses. And unfortunately, we have to, you know, for the people who get lost, it's not good, but it's going to happen. No.
Well, the idea is that machines, you know, there's inherent delay in a person seeing something and reacting to it. Machines don't have as much of a delay. So.
Well, that again comes back to me. If you're making an autonomous vehicle and you're putting all this technology in it to see what's around you, you need the proper technology. Apparently, I think it's LDAR was the technology that they did not have on at the time.
The LIDAR, we actually had a guest on a month or so ago talking about LIDAR.
That's
she
right.
was brilliant.
Yes. Oh, yes.
She was here for the auto show.
That's right. You know, and apparently it was able to see even further. And if it could, then it could have triggered the braking mechanisms or slowed it at least. I mean, that is the claim of an autonomous vehicle. And I think that becomes the issue here, along with all the other stuff. Yes, the person was extremely, to be kind, unwise in what they did. But the idea was this autonomous vehicle is supposed to have the technology to prevent that kind of thing.
But we're rushing. Mm. We're rushing the technology. We are trying to get this technology to market way faster than I think we should. I think we should be very conservative. I think we should take our time. There's no real rush that it has to be there.
Right.
And if we're going to do it, let's do it right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, of course, Cal. But think of all the people that died the same night on the road that had nothing to do with autonomous vehicles. The promise, and we don't know if anything could have stopped that car in time for that woman not to be killed.
True.
We don't know that. There's no way. We know that the woman stepped out in front of a fast-moving car.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
If a vehicle's going...
No technology, nor no person. We can't tell if a person had been behind the wheel and it was had no autonomous vehicle technology on it at all. If it had all the technology that we could possibly put on it, we don't know if any of it would have stopped it in time.
Yeah.
When you think about all the people that died that had nothing to do with that, if we could just save half of those people by using autonomous vehicle technology, even if it's not perfect, we can wait until everything is great. And to Cal's point, let's go slow, let's do that. But what if your loved one could have been saved in the time that it took from maybe good enough to absolutely perfect?
Yeah.
Think of all the people that are going to die between those 2 days.
Well, in some ways, Gary, it's already happening with ABS and things like that. Technologies have been put on, or lane control. Go ahead.
Even if a vehicle is going 30 miles an hour, it still takes approximately 100 feet to stop. So if someone steps out in that vehicle by moving 5 feet, they're going to get hit. There's no technology that can stop the physics.
Yep, exactly. Well, I what I hear you saying, Gary, is that we need to slowly incorporate this technology and deal with the complications rather than waiting till it's all kind of perfect and then jumping in. But right. I'm sure there's pressure for exactly that. Don't use this Uber or anybody else because we could possibly end up with this kind of a situation.
Yeah, but think of all the people that die every day on our roadways.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Just save half of them.
Yep. Yep, exactly. So much of the technology too has been trickling down. I can think of when I worked for Daimler Chrysler back in the early 2000s. A lot of the Mercedes technology was beginning to trickle down, and it might have been even ABS, the automatic braking systems, or lane control, or some of those things. They're in the very most where they're in the fanciest cars were making their way down to other ones that into the regular cars, if I will. And I think that's what's going on with a lot of the technology here. Well, all right, guys, we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, one of the other issues this week has been this huge brouhaha about Facebook and people bailing out of it, like Elon Musk removing his SpaceX and Tesla sites from Facebook. Should we all jump ship? And if we do, we better start swimming. Where are we going to go? We're talking about as we continue with our Tech Roundtable here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome aboard, and thank you, Kasten Thomas, for being with us, along with Mr. Cal Carson. Always good to see you here, Cal.
Always good to be here, I'm going to tell you that.
And Gary Baker, afloat in the harbor.
Absolutely, and it's a gorgeous day here.
All right, down in Fort Lauderdale. All right, guys, one of the huge topics this week was Facebook and what kind of blew up there, the claim that Facebook, in essence, was leaking and leaking some, tons of data. Not directly themselves, but through third parties. Kasten, your thoughts initially.
My thoughts are that Facebook does a lot of things that they apologize for when they get caught. They got caught. Well, you know, it was about a year and a half ago they were caught creating clinical depression in subjects by modifying their news feed.
Seriously.
And it got a little bit of press, but not the coverage that it could, because everybody's in fear of Facebook.
Why would you have to fear Facebook?
Yeah.
Because of what they know about us. Because of how they can adjust the news feeds. Because of the way that they deliver information. By the way they capitalize on it. By the way that they're using the information to invade privacy. I mean, the idea that they can affect mood swings by adjusting the amount of positive or negative news information that comes into a person's news feed is incredibly powerful, because when you're looking at it, you're just assuming that you're getting a random amount of information from different sources.
Wow.
But when a person can control that, that power of doing that anonymously and without the knowledge. I mean, I got off of Facebook 2.5 years ago, and I'm only on there for one reason, and that's because I run my alumni association's local club, and everybody communicates from there. But if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be on Facebook, because I actually know what they do, how they do it, to a degree, because, you know, they're a public company, but everything's going on in their labs and in their programming. Unless you're inside, you don't know.
So that's the reason why every time I go to your alumni page, I feel bummed out. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we played Michigan in basketball. I'm bummed out this week.
That was painful.
But you make a point that I ascribe to, and that is, I don't put anything that I care about on Facebook. I put crap on Facebook. I look at and read only stuff I really feel like reading on Facebook.
Do you ever use that thumbs up?
No.
Okay, well, good for you.
I do.
Because when you use the thumbs up, that is, there's actually a way for Facebook to translate that into a personality profile. And using personality profile.
Oh, sure, because whatever you're thumbing up, you know, they take that and they run a whatever against it, and they go like, yeah, this guy's this way or this guy's that way.
Yeah, my wife's in real estate. We don't use this for her real estate, but Facebook actually says we can push ads to people that are highly likely to be interested in buying or selling a home.
Yeah.
Just because of what they're liking and not.
Gary, what are your thoughts on this?
So I don't use Facebook a lot. And I don't, because, you know, lots of different reasons, but it's hard to trust Facebook. And I think what's happened is they've proven that things have to change. Zuckerberg has come on and said, look, regulate it. So he knows it. Well, too bad he couldn't self-regulate it.
Yeah.
But so he wants somebody else to do it for him. That's not very responsible. But I never thought that Facebook was very responsible.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, apparently in this particular case, the leak of 120 million pieces of data happened when somebody from a researcher, I think at one of the major universities it was, took the information, created an app or an algorithm that was able to sift through it and interpret the data, then pass that on to this company called Cambridge Analytica, which you pointed out something in some notes that you sent me, Kel. It's not new to the game. As a matter of fact, back in 2008, the Democrats were using it.
Sure, they were doing similar things. Now, what's been revealed about Cambridge Analytica, the organization that's doing it, they were actually putting out false quizzes in order to manipulate things.
Right.
So, you know, I've been saying this for months. The Russians weren't manipulating us. The guys getting the election were manipulating us. So
who's going to jail, Kasten?
If they're from D.C., nobody.
I don't think anybody's going to jail. Because this went over. Now that's interesting. This went over. Cambridge Analytica is a company based in the UK and in Great Britain, and I don't know. They may go after them there.
Now, what has made social media go this nefarious route? I mean, go back to the old days when you had nothing but something called AOL. And yes, they had advertising. But they
have mail.
But they didn't do anything with your data or anything like that, or at least that I knew of. Why all of a sudden we're starting to go that nefarious path?
Because when somebody figures out how to monetize it,
yep,
everybody's going to follow.
So
because you follow the money.
And money has no filter. It's for good and for bad.
I think somebody said it's the root of all evil.
It was the love of money that's the root of all evil.
That's true.
That's true.
I stand respectfully corrected.
Only today.
Cambridge Analytica was just an example of companies at Cal that we've gotten better at taking this raw data and both interpreting it better, but then turning it around, Kasten, as you were saying, turning it around on the users in order to manipulate them. That, to me, is the scary part of this thing. Companies are able to do that kind of thing.
There's a famous adage that says, if the product's free, you're the product.
Good point. Because there's no free lunch.
That's right.
Everything comes with a price. And the only thing that you have to worry about is if you happen to be highly paranoid about stuff like this, is there a little guy with a little tiny mustache behind Facebook? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We could be changing the entire scope of the world using social media.
Oh, which we absolutely are.
Yeah. And so, you know, you have to be careful with this sort of stuff. Anytime you're getting something free, there's a deal somewhere, and you're dealing with the devil somewhere down the line.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I didn't realize this, but some of the background information I was reading, you can go into settings on Facebook and then find out what the apps are that you have. I had no idea that I had like 20 different apps, and they can either, you know, be public, the information they're sending out, or they can be only to yourself. And you can regulate that in the settings there. But what stunned me was the number of apps that I'm using. If you would ask me, are you using apps on Facebook? I'd say no. But here's 20
of them. You downloaded them and said, you can use this on Facebook. You did it yourself, right?
I know. I had forgotten how often I had done that.
Okay, now I'm going to blow you away. Absolutely going to blow you away.
We got to take a quick break. When you come back, you can feel free to blow me away. Hey, it's Kasten Thomas, Cal Carson, Foster Brown, and Gary Baker. And we have a tech roundtable going here on the Internet Advisor. So, Kasten, you're going to blow my mind, all right? So how are you going to do that?
When you have Facebook automatically installed on your iPhone or your Android device, when you sign in,
yes,
you agree to the user license. That user license says that without restriction, Facebook can monitor your GPS, whether the application is loaded or not.
Okay.
Who you're emailing, what applications you're using and how long you're using them, what all of your web browser is doing, regardless of which web browser you're using. Let's say you uninstall the Facebook app on the iPhone or the Android.
Yeah.
Facebook is still able to track, unless you turn off other settings on the iPhone or the Android, so that Facebook can't get that information.
Wow.
And where are these other settings buried?
They're buried in the settings, in the iPhone. It's the little gear.
Yes.
You just have to know where to go. And there are some YouTube and online guides on where to go and turn all those functions off.
Or if you don't want to be bothered, you can just back up your iPhone and wipe that sucker and then reinstall the OS and start over clean, right?
Yeah, but you never log into Facebook from the web or from the Facebook app. Otherwise, you're agreeing to that acceptable use license. Of
course. Gary, what are you going to say?
So I have a question for you, Cal or Kasten. Do you ever, when you install another app, do you say, allow Facebook to access my information on the other app? Do you ever sign in using Facebook?
Never.
You know, they'll say sign in using Facebook or create a new user.
Yeah.
You know, user profile.
I never ever log into any application using anything but the native login.
Yeah, I don't either. I never use Facebook or LinkedIn to do that.
They also invite you to use Chrome, don't they? Yeah, well, isn't it Chrome? No, Google. I think they also invite you to use that. And I would suspect that there might be some of the same thing going on there. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap these things up. We got another thing to talk about that happened this week. And we'll get to that when we come back in just a moment here on the Internet Advisor, our tech roundtable. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Gary Baker, Foster Brown, Cal Carson, and Carsten Thomas. Carsten Thomas, pardon me. Two of your names together are going to kill me.
I'll answer to anything.
This is what you get when you try to run the engineering board with boxing gloves. I mean, it's just crazy over here.
Thank you for doing it. It really is a challenge, and you've been out of the seat for quite a while, but thank you so much for doing it today. All right, you said, Carsten, you were going to blow my mind with something. What was that thing you were going to blow my mind with in terms of Facebook?
Just what happens on the iPhone or the Android. Because if you sign in to Facebook using the app or in a web browser, you agree to the acceptable use policy. After that, even if you uninstall the Facebook app on Android or iOS, you're still susceptible to what Facebook tracks on your mobile device. They can track all of your web browsing, regardless of the web browser you're using, your GPS, whether Facebook is loaded or not, who you're emailing, and what apps you're using, and how long you're using them, and the time of day you're using them. They essentially can build a profile of everything you do on your device, even if the app's not loaded.
By the way, I'm gonna do something. I'm going to put a link up on our show notes for this hour. I'll put a bunch of links up there. But there was one I saw from the Wall Street Journal about how to delete Facebook or less drastic measures. You know, so you could do some, you can step down and do some safety, like for instance, going into the apps and making sure that they only pass the information that says only me in terms of who gets that information or where it goes. And you can do that in the background. So I will post that as well. Kind of interesting to see big forces where, well, Elon Musk pulled the plug on his SpaceX and Tesla sites on Facebook.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for him to release his competitor to Facebook next week because of that.
Serious?
No, I'm joking. Oh. But it'd be a great move.
That would be.
After you told me all this, now I want to take my iPhone when I get a bunch of money that I don't have anything to do, put it in a Ziploc bag, go on a Caribbean cruise, turn on my Facebook app, and toss it overboard. Let them track it as it goes to the bottom.
Thing is, they know so much about you, they'd know you were going to do it.
Did you hear that? No.
Well, guys, one of the other things was a big story that came up, and I didn't realize kind of what this whole trade war with China bodes for Michigan in particular, but I just saw that Best Buy has decided to dump Huawei. Huawei is a huge Chinese manufacturer of all sorts of things, smartphones, a lot of other devices as well, am I right?
I think they should drop it just because you can't pronounce it from the way it's spelled.
I've been wanting to say Huawei for a long time.
You're not going to get it to do it.
Yeah, they're a huge electronics concern over in China, and even if Best Buy dumps them, for them, I don't think it's really going to hurt them because they got the entire Chinese market to deal with, so they'll still make money. And I don't know. I mean, is it that big of a deal other than the fact that now, for the sake of Gary, because I love doing this with him, there won't be another competitor to buy a phone from?
I'm not biting.
Yeah, because one thing I know for sure, unless they come out with something terribly innovative and wonderful, he'll still be using his iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm almost ready to dump it. I thought about you for the last 2 days just because it's been so bad. And I just can't wait for 11.3 to come out that's supposed to fix this problem. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing that that it's has gotten as bad as it has.
Let's take off on this.
So I'm very close. Check with me next week to see if I have or not. And I really love my iPhone.
I do too.
It's gotten to the point where I'm having so much trouble with it.
I'm having no problems with mine, but then again, I guess it depends on how you're using it, and different people use it different ways.
Well, yeah. You know, I saw an article. It was really kind of cute. That said that the iOS 11 has been for Apple the Vista. For Apple.
Ooh, yeah. That's brutal.
Gary, you and I have been around, we've been around for that nightmare.
Well, you know, that helped us because so many people have problems with it. They all called our show to ask how to deal with those problems. So,
Lord, yes.
You know, and I do believe, because people think that, okay, they're having trouble with their battery life, they're having trouble with how slow it is, they're having trouble with this, they're having trouble with that. And they want to go change. I had some friends that were exchanging their batteries. And I said, you know, if you just wait till 11.3, it's an operating system problem. They'll fix this. And it looks like, from the beta test notes that everybody's been, what I've been reading, it looks like 11.3 will fix it. So we'll see. We'll see if it breaks something else, which has happened to, you know, some of the other releases that Apple has had, but hopefully it's fixed. And if that happens, and if it happens before I throw my iPhone in the drink, you know, it'll probably fix my iPhone and I'll be happy with it again.
Man overboard! Cal, why is it that it has seemed, almost since the death of Steve Jobs, that the system has gone haywire? And what was simply before, you know, it just works. You know, 8 years ago, I think, when I began using Apple products.
But it didn't just work. There were all sorts of problems then, too. We just have short memories.
Well, it seems to me there were less problems.
Apple. It's not just Apple, right? We've taken our pot shots at Microsoft and others for similar things. So,
well, to answer your question, Foster, I think it's like any other business. When you have the founder leave that particular company, you have a certain amount of the culture ingrained into it, but then once that person has moved out of the way, other people bring in their own cultures or their own twist on that culture, and when they start doing that, the what you call established culture that you're so used to to goes away because it's changed, because the entire business has changed. I mean, even though, like Gary said, Apple wasn't perfect, but Steve was the sort of guy where, in some cases, he'd say, look, if it's not going to work correctly, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And it just didn't get done. But in this particular case, now that it's no longer that person running that show, that it's set that culture that way, now things can change.
I'm curious, Cassin, you're a boss. You founded InterWorks how long ago?
Oh, 1995.
Okay. So many years ago, you founded your company. What are your thoughts on this? You know,
well, let me take it in a completely different direction. Okay. I don't know if you know this, but part of this is that Steve Jobs went away from Apple, and Apple almost went to zero on stock.
Yep, you're right.
And then he came back and resurrected it. Well, I went out and did some work with the company that he was building after he had left Apple, and had dinner with him. And, you know, there's a whole story of that evening that's fascinating. But he built a computer called Next Computer after Apple. And when they brought him back, that Next Computer became the next version of the Apple operating system. So, you know, there's a little history in there.
Yeah.
But the computer itself bombed terribly, right?
Well, that is true. The Next Computer did not sell.
No.
You know, it cost a lot of money. They lost a lot of money on it, just like the Lisa.
All right, guys. Hey, we're going to wrap this hour up and get ready for taking some live phone calls on WJR, which is our next hour of programming here on the Internet Advisor. Hope you'll stick around for that. We're going to have a fun time with our audience, and you're invited to join in as well.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Mr. Gary Baker down at Fort Lauderdale. In studio, we have Kasten Thomas and Cal Carson, and we are going to be having a ball today talking with you because it's our open line program. The number is 800-859-0957. Mr. Dorsch, our engineer, is standing by to answer that phone. Again, 800-859-0957. Give us a call.
This is the Internet Advisor. We're taking your calls at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Now, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Oh, it's so good to be back talking with you folks again and inviting you to join us with your questions. Remember, our mantra here is the only dumb question is a question you don't ask. We will take all sorts of questions, and we had a wonderful testimonial back at the beginning of February. A fellow called in, Duvalier was his name, near the end of the show, and talked about how his mother, who had been very afraid of tech, had listened to our program and had just kind of gotten on board and had lost that fear. As a result, was able to hold on to her nursing job, which she was in danger of losing because technology was moving in and she wasn't able to handle it. And so listening to our show, she kind of got some questions answered, got to feeling better about it, and has done very well by it. And as a matter of fact, financially has benefited from being able to work more years at that job and to have the Social Security benefits increase because of that. So it's kind of a neat testimonial. So that's what we're here for. At 800-859-0957.
Do we get a cut of the gate on that one?
That would be cute. No, I don't think so.
Well, what's 30% of nothing?
A dozen of cookies?
You know, Foster, it's interesting that there was a study done by FreshBooks. So don't know how good the study is, but it said 49% of the current freelancers are over 50. And a lot of it has to do, I think, and they go on to explain that a lot of people are, because of their age, price, mm-hmm. Are being locked out of the job market. So they're going freelance or they retire early and they want to go. They don't want a full-time job.
Yeah.
They want a job that they can really feel engaged with. And yeah. They're doing more freelance than ever before. 32% of those baby boomers also that are working full-time plan to go freelance within the next within the next 5 years.
Wow.
So you can see that either they have to or want
to. Yeah, exactly. Right? The have to, I think, is going to increase.
Well, and so many of those, the way that they become good at their freelance jobs is they understand technology more and more. So
exactly.
It's more important than ever for them to get on board the technology bandwagon.
Well, speaking of getting on a technology bandwagon, we've got somebody waiting to talk to us. That's Mr. Red out in Wayne. Well, how you doing? Thank you, and welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Well, that's Mr. Ouch.
Pardon me?
I'm here.
Okay, hi.
That's okay. Thank you. I had to reach over and turn my radio down.
All right.
Thank you for taking my call. I have an AOL account
both on my laptop and on my iPhone.
All right.
If I send an email on my phone using AOL, I get an answer. But that answer and the email do not show up on my laptop AOL account. I've asked two IT engineers if they could address that. They have no idea. And you?
So we want us to take a crack at it. That sounds,
give me your opinion.
But that's
my, my first thought, although I don't know for sure because I don't ever use AOL, haven't used it in years, AOL may not be an IMAP capable mail service, so therefore it won't necessarily duplicate everything from one source to another. If you check and see, and while we're on the air, I'll check, and I can always get back to you if you keep listening. I'll see if AOL has an IMAP feature to it, and if you can turn that on, then it should duplicate whatever you do on either one of those platforms back and forth.
That's brilliant, Cal.
Now, another, if I could offer you this, another thought is I can set my iPhone down and go to a website. My laptop, the same website, and I do not get the same display. I don't know if that's just a odd thing about.
The way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to get a mobile version of the website. It's called the responsive design, and that's the way they design it so that it they can display the most important information in the most usable fashion. Using an iPhone because of the screen format is so much smaller.
It's also elongated
instead of wider.
Right, exactly. I saw that the other day. I was looking at our site, Gary, and I noticed the very same thing. That matter of fact, I liked the layout on the iPhone because all the information is there in a nice column, whereas it's spread out a lot more in the website. So that's that. Help your.
So I've got a couple of ideas.
Hang on. Go ahead, Cass.
So, Red, real quick, let's just eliminate a couple things just to make sure. Obviously, you're logged in under the same username on both units, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And, gosh, I forgot the question. the other thing is, one of the settings in some mail systems is to delete the inbound message after it's removed from the server. You might want to check a setting and see if that's happening, because if your phone is on, then it would be deleting the message, and so your laptop would never be able to download it because it's no longer there. Yeah. So that could be a possibility. Mm. And then, boy, the other one slipped my mind again. Must not have been that good.
It's old age. It's creeping up on all of us.
I do have this to add. I do have a Yahoo account, which I only use for certain things. Mm-hmm. And I will confirm that my Yahoo on my iPhone and the Yahoo on my laptop do not give me the same reading. I haven't done that, and it just occurred to me to do it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I thank you for your time.
Yeah, great way to troubleshoot this as well. Excellent. I always want to compliment our listeners when they show that they're on the initiative and get that kind of thing going, too.
Yeah, I just did a search on the web, and if you go to the AOL website, they do have an IMAP setting for AOL, and so he needs to change his address to imap.aol.com, and the port is 993, and the SSL needs to be turned on with a yes.
Okay. There you go, Red. Okay. Additional information for you. By the way, if you missed that, we have a podcast that we put out on Sunday nights where you can listen to that all over again, okay?
Thank you for being there.
Oh, thank you. We're delighted to be able to help you. Thank you for the rest of you out there who are standing by with your questions. Here is the phone number, 800-859-0957. We'd love to talk with you, whatever your question may be, standing by here at the Internet Advisor.
This is the Internet Advisor. We're taking your calls at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Now, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Riddell.
Thanks a lot for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. Hey, spread the news. We're here on Saturday night, 6 to 7 o'clock, live. If you've got a question, please send it in to us. You can also do that during the week by going to InternetAdvisor.net, and we have a link there. You can contact us button, and you can get to us there. Also, at the on our homepage, at the very bottom, there is a comment box, and you can put your question in there as well. And just a reminder for you that on Sunday nights, we post a podcast that has both hours of the Internet Advisor. Yes, there is another hour of it. Matter of fact, we talked quite a bit about a lot of the technology stories this week, the Uber accident, a terrible tragedy, somebody losing their lives, and Facebook, and all sorts of stuff. So if you want to make sure you get that, simply go to InternetAdvisor.net on Sunday night, and the whole podcast will be there for you to click on.
You know, it just fits right in with the season. It's kind of like an Internet Advisor Easter egg.
There you go. Yeah, you don't need to hunt for it. It's right there. So, hey, the idea right now is if you have a question, any kind of a question about your phone, maybe about your printer or maybe about your computer, we'd love to tackle it. We've got some great people here. Gary Baker and I have been doing this since 1998. Cal Carson with us here from the Apple world, and we'll talk in just a minute about some exciting things that are happening there. And Kasten Thomas has recently joined us with his expertise in security. Delighted to have you along for the ride as well, Kasten.
I'm fired up to be here.
Yeah, you got a little thing I want you to hear. You should do that a little later on.
1998. That's back when the internet used to run on kerosene. Right?
No, it was a couple hamsters, I think it was, who were pedaling quite quickly. Oh, now, Cal, speaking of Apple, been a lot of things happening with Apple. And as a matter of fact, a big event is coming up on coming Tuesday.
Well, it's a big event coming up. And normally when they have these big events, they normally stream them. But this one won't be streamed, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
No, it will not. So you have to just go by whatever you hear through the media. But it's going to be on March 27th. And this is aimed specifically at the educational side of Apple and what they do for them and stuff like that. So they've named it Let's Take a Field Trip. Because every one of their sessions, they have some sort of theme to it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of rumors going on, and these are strictly rumors, folks. But there's thoughts of a lower-cost iPad coming out. And along with that lower-cost iPad, also a lower-cost Apple Pencil that will probably work with that smaller iPad as well. So that's out on the run.
Wait, a smaller iPad? Is that what they're going to do for the lower?
No. Traditionally, you normally use the iPad Pro with the Apple Pencil.
Ah.
There is talk or rumor the Apple Pencil will work with a smaller iPad, like the 9.7-inch one.
Okay. Gary?
Hey, Cal. I'm just curious. Do you know what the numbers are or demographics around who uses the Apple Pencil?
No, I do not. I don't have anything that even comes close to that. I do know that it's very, very strong in the creative side of the world and advertising and that sort of thing. But after it gets past that, my information gets kind of clouded.
Yeah, I wondered because, you know, the Apple Pencil's a little or has been a little expensive. And I know people that they said, you know, when it comes down in price, they'll buy it and maybe use it. And I'm thinking Apple doesn't really come down in price very often just because they don't need to usually. But so I was just curious to see if there was some sort of demographic number that indicated that. I know they use it in graphic arts quite a bit.
Well, I think the reason why the rumor is that they're going to put out a lower cost pencil is to go with the lower cost iPad so they can get a greater saturation in the educational realm. Which, you know, of course, would spill over to anything else that anyone could use that pencil for.
Makes sense. Yeah.
What is a lower cost iPad? We're still talking a lot of money.
Well, the rumors that are going around saying that iPad would probably come in the market somewhere around $230.
Okay,
that's lower cost for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Great.
Yeah. Wow. So it's roughly somewhere about $70 to $100 less than the current price of one. So that's a thought. So we'll see what happens with that, whether it comes to fruition. The other thing is a new low-cost MacBook or MacBook Air. And when they say low-cost, they mean it's going to come in under the $1,000 price point.
Mm-hmm.
So the 13-inch has not been really revamped much since about 2014, with the exception of a couple of speed bumps here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I doubt they would drop the price on the 12-inch, because that's a pretty niche market and it's doing what it wants to do. But the 13-inch would be a form factor that I think is perfect for the educational realm.
Mm.
And there's a possibility they may drop the price on that so that that becomes more affordable to education.
Get it around $1,000?
Under $1,000.
Oh, under $1,000. Wow.
But, you know, I always hate it when they say, it'll be under $1,000. That means it's $999.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. With taxes and everything else, we're back up in the $1,200 range. Probably.
There's also...
Yeah, and that's certainly with, you know, maybe with, you know, a lower amount of RAM and lower...
Yes.
This. So, you know, they have a product line, right? And they're trying to get the low end of the product line down to an affordable market niche.
Yeah, I think so.
What do you do they have any hope of coming against Chromebooks? Chromebooks seem to be, and the Google apps that work with it and Google Cloud seem to be just storming the educational market.
Yeah, I don't think they don't want to compete.
No, I doubt
why should
seriously
they even. Price?
Yeah, they're not going to go that direction. That's just not Apple's way. A lot of people said, you know, Apple when the netbooks were out, isn't Apple going to make a netbook? You know, that's right. They never even went close to it because that's just not their caveat. That's not where they want to go. And a Chromebook is more disposable.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't think Apple is one to make a disposable type product.
But the issue is this, guys, that it seems that Chromebooks have got the kids used to using the Google apps, used to using the Google Cloud, and the whole, you know, Google Store, you know, and what is it called, Play Store? I think it is.
Yeah, it's the Play Store.
Yeah, in other words, they're getting themselves into that world and getting used to that world.
Sure.
And it's much lower cost, so... What's Apple going to do?
Apple's going to do what they do best, and Google's going to do what they do best, and you make your decision which architecture and which...
But I don't know. It just seems like it's slipping away. There's this educational market is slipping away from... Yeah, Kasten, what do you think?
Well, there's an irony there because Apple went after the education market in order to gain that foothold, particularly in the creative environment.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that the tables are turning, and now Google is capitalizing and really going after that education market. So it will have an impact over the long term.
Yeah. And yes, in terms of directing the minds and hearts of the kids who are right now getting used to it. I know that it's interesting to see that my grandchildren who went through MSU and are... two of them are now graduating, or three of them are graduating from there. But in any case, they started with Apple. So... they're on that train, and you can see that it's all very, you know, iPads and Apple Watches and things like that are all very natural to them as part of that environment. I'm thinking that there's a group of kids that are coming behind the millennials who are going to be really moving towards Google.
Yeah, here we come to the autonomous train.
You know, eventually it's going to just come down to an appliance. You know, you know, remember back in the old days, you used to, you know, everybody was loyal to one particular brand, televisions.
Right, right.
I used to know people, they would not buy anything but an RCA Victor TV. That was it. They had to be be that and nothing else. Now people don't care. Right. All they care about is what does the TV do? Yeah. Not so much. They're not brand loyal anymore.
They brought out the RCA was being made by what? Huawei back in China.
And you talk about the ones that are going into Google, okay? You said the reason why they're going to Google because it's less than Apple. Well, if somebody comes up with something cheaper than Google, guess what?
Yeah.
People aren't brand loyal anymore.
No, you're right.
They go where it's cheap.
Let me give you the phone number again, folks, 800-859-0957. I know for some of you who are listening to this, it's kind of like, what is this? It's a brand new experience for you here on Saturday nights, early evening here on WJR. We are delighted to have the opportunity to be back with you again. Open lines at 800-859-0957. Please don't hesitate to call us. We'll help you figure out the question. If you're having trouble with that, and we'll get you some answers as well. Hi, and welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown here, co-host along with Gary Baker. And we've got a studio full of technical skill here with Cal Carson and Kasten Thomas and Gary Baker, of course, down in Florida there, and myself. I'm just kind of, I call myself the bus driver. But we have lines open for your calls. I know it was the first time we've been on here in a while, and we want to make sure that you spread the word.
And remember, call early, call often.
Like voting in Chicago. Oops, excuse me. 800-859-0957. And as we say, our mantra is, the only dumb call is the one, dumb question, that is, that you don't ask. Cal, some other things apparently coming up on Tuesday going to be revealed by Apple?
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to talk about. Now, I'm excited about this one because it looks really cool. They possibly may announce the AirPower. And
what's AirPower?
AirPower is the little mat that you would lay either your iPhone 8 or your iPhone 10.
10, yeah.
And you do wireless charging with it. The same mat will also wirelessly charge your Apple Watch.
Ooh.
The same mat will also wirelessly charge, and they're not released yet, but coming in the near future, your AirPods.
Which are the earbuds,
earphones, yes.
God, excuse me. Go ahead, Ken.
Does it make breakfast? That's what I want to know.
If it gets hot enough, you can put an Eggo waffle on it, probably.
put a bagel on there and a little cream cheese.
but that would, you know, when I get up to an iPhone 8, I would love that. I mean, just to be able to walk up to my desk, lay it down, and have it charge, that'd be beautiful.
It's such a hassle, you know, especially with Apple continuously changing the plugs, you know, the methods of plugging into the darn computers.
Well, it's to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is I gotta say they didn't make it better when they went to the USB-C protocol. That one I don't like because nothing beats the MagSafe connectors.
Oh, yeah, the MagSafe connectors. I agree with you on that.
Saved more laptops by being able to pop that sucker right off without yanking the whole laptop off the table.
That's a very good point.
I miss that really much. But aside from that, that's about really all that's big that I hear is going on in that particular case. There's rumor of probably iPhone 10 coming in a new color, but yeah, okay, put a cover
what
on it.
What else can they do with it?
Yeah, that's about it, really, when you think about it. And then there's a rumor about an iPhone SE 2. And you go like, what the heck is an iPhone SE 2? Well, if anyone remembers the iPhone 5, they made it into the iPhone SE, which is still being sold to this very day.
What is the SE function?
It's just second edition, as far as I know.
Oh, jeez.
And what it is, they took the old iPhone 5 and gutted all the stuff out of it so it functions more like an iPhone 7, but in a smaller form factor.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Are they going to do that same thing with the iPhone 10?
No.
Oh.
The SE 2 will be the same iPhone that the SE that they have now, but supposedly it's supposed to have some more bells and whistles in it. However, there's a legend that's just a legend, and that nothing's really going to come out with that. So that's pretty much about it.
You know, isn't it in some ways, guys, is the problem that Apple has right now is coming up with another act. So a lot of this, you know, the rumors, et cetera, are because there's really nothing that's thundering down the line, you know, something sitting in the background that we're all waiting to see. Apple TV, Apple Car, you know, they got the software in the cars.
Yes.
But, you know, it's just like, what's next? What could be next on the horizon?
You see, the problem is, in my opinion, is that for a while in tech, period, there was a point where there was just all sorts of things coming out, Alexa and iPhone and Apple TV and Roku and all that sort of stuff. And we had a storm of stuff coming. So everything, what's next? What's next? What's next? So now they've created all these things and we're pretty happy. There's really nothing next to do right now that's easily within reach and probably easily within budget. Because not only can you make something, you have to make it innovative and new, you got to make it affordable as well.
Yeah.
And people are already balking at the fact that the iPhone 10's $1,000 phone.
I know.
$1,000. I wouldn't pay $1,000 phone ever.
Mm-mm.
I just couldn't imagine
it. Or is that proof that what we're really are carrying around are computers?
That's exactly what they are. They're a handheld computer that just happens to have a phone.
That's about it.
Because go ahead.
So, Cal, I'm interested. What about the watch? It seems like they're putting some effort now into making that a differentiator compared to some of the other wrist wearable devices out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Already, it is the top-selling smartwatch in the world as it stands right now.
Wow.
And I think they're going to continue to increase the capabilities of that watch and features and stuff like that, because it is a wearable that is going beyond just being a watch.
Oh, yeah.
It's starting to do the same thing that the phone is doing, in the sense that it's a small microcomputer that just happens to be a watch as well.
I got to tell you that thanks to you very much again for my gift on our 20th anniversary. The guys gave me an iPhone 3 watch. iWatch 3. It is so much fun, and I'm learning so many things with it. It's just never ending, you know, whether you're changing the face on it or using it for countdown when I'm cooking, or I'd actually answer the phone on this thing as well. It's just incredible. There's all sorts of things that go with it.
So let me ask. Go ahead, Gary.
So, Foster, did you call Dick Tracy?
No, but I couldn't help but kind of chuckle at myself. Here I am talking to my wrist.
I'd like to run this by Gary because he's always on the business standpoint of the world. Do you think you'll ever have a need for something like that, like an iWatch?
Well, I do think so, and there are certain use cases in business. And I will tell you that, Google Glass is still around.
Yeah.
Remember Google Glass?
Oh, yeah.
Still around, but they're being used now in business. And there are a couple other companies that are making essentially the same kind of thing with checklists and some other pop-up display functionality within the Google Glasses that are, for special use circumstances, are absolutely wonderful. So, I think there will be a need.
That's great. Hey, we have somebody calling in here from Far Franklin. Celeste, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
Hi, I just had a comment to make. I couldn't resist. Back in the early 80s, I was given a little part-time job for a communications company to deliver cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
And that was early 80s.
Yeah.
And I would deliver them, and I would collect checks for over $2,000 per phone.
Oh, yeah.
So when somebody said I would never pay $1,000 today, well, that's what they paid.
Oh, Celeste, I had one of those cell phones I carried it
in a bag, right?
It was a bag, exactly. And I worked for a construction company. This would have been in the, early 70s. And it was incredible. They had to drill a hole in my trunk, put a whip antenna back in there, and then there was a big unit in the car. But and then I had a bag exactly that I carried it in. That was huge.
So
yes, and they were huge, and I would have a big case, and I would remember putting it down on the counter, this big heavy thing, and you would be able, when I delivered them, to charge them in the cigarette lighter. At that time. But they were over $2,000. I just couldn't resist. So when people think it's a lot of money today, it is not.
Well, yeah. Thank you for that flashback, Celeste. That was absolutely amazing. Now, are you still carrying your $2,000 phone?
No, it's long gone.
What phone do you have now, Celeste?
I use an Apple.
So you use an iPhone, huh? Okay.
Yes.
What version of the iPhone?
Well, believe it or not, my son gave it to me, and I haven't upgraded. It's only a 5S, but it works fine.
Okay. That's fine. If it works fine for you, that is the bottom line. You don't necessarily need to go to...
It's still going. And one of the things that I did was I read the book Steve Jobs wrote years ago.
Yeah.
And he changed the world. He did.
Yeah.
I think amazing.
In many ways, you're right. The products that he put out there... really changed the world, our culture, in so many ways. You know, I can't. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. I don't know, guys. And Celeste, can you think of before, when did the iPhone come out?
Well, it's 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you think of before then having all sorts of people walking around looking at their phones?
Well, they weren't really looking at them, but they were talking on them. I mean, you know, there are people with flip phones and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
But if I go to downtown Royal Oak, it is everybody, literally, everybody's looking at their phones.
True, well, you did have the BlackBerries that were called CrackBerries. So
exactly. Yeah,
there were those people.
Hey, Celeste, thank you so much for that.
And I have one other comment. Oh. I still have the MacBook Pro that my son gave me for Christmas of 2010, and it worked fine.
All right. Thank you, Celeste. So thank you so much for giving us a call here on the Internet Advisor. Well, it's that time of the program when we invite Mr. Mike Brennan, the editor of MI Tech News, to join us and talk a little bit about the headlines that he provides every week on middle of the week and also on Fridays. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks very much. I'm looking forward to a big basketball game tonight.
Ooh, yeah. Everybody's jockeying to get their seat for that big game tonight. And yep. Crossing their fingers for the maize and blue. Hey, listen, Mike, let's talk about something. You've got some headlines we normally talk about, but to let people know the kind of thing that's available at MI Tech News. But this weekend, we're going to just kind of quickly give you a chance to talk about something very important that's coming up on April the 4th, which is the IoTech Conference, the IoTech Connect Conference that you are putting together along with Rick Beckers from Cloud Tech One, right? And yep. We're putting that together at the Troy Marriott. And yep. There's a very special, I think folks should know about it, it's really neat, VIP reception that they can get it on at the end of the day of the presentations.
Yep, got some real power hitters coming in. There's a list of them on my website.
Right.
We have also invited a couple of our politicians. I haven't got confirmations yet on those, but the good old MEDC cross-scheduled on me, and in the morning is when they're going to be doing the American Center for Mobility open house, same morning as my program. Yes, I was quite pleased to hear that.
Oh, dear.
Then that means all them politicians are just going to be floating around town, and I'm going to try to grab a bunch of them, bring them over to the show. But yeah, the VIP event starts, roughly around 6 o'clock. It's right after our $50,000 IoT pitch competition that Kaiba Innovations is doing for us. So it's kind of fluid. We don't know exactly how long that's going to take. But right afterwards, we roll into the Mediterranean room, and we have some really special surprises in there. That's the room where during the course of the day, the folks that are putting on their virtual reality and augmented reality workshops are going to leave their gear in there, so everybody who attends the reception will be able to play around. This isn't your cardboard over your smartphone stuff. This is commercial-grade VR, AR that'll blow your mind,
It's fantastic. The
other thing we're going to have in there in the morning is the drone workshop, Great Lakes Drone Company, one of only two licensed companies in the United States to do drone swarms. What's a drone swarm? If you watch the Olympics opening and closing ceremonies, you saw the rings of the Olympics in the sky, those were done by a drone swarm. And so he's going to have his gear in there, and you'll be able to talk to him about how this all works out. But it's, in lieu of fireworks, a lot of people now are moving towards these drone swarms to put on the big queue.
Oh, yeah, because they're so flexible, and they can do so many things,
They can even, put your face up there in the sky,
Oh, just what I wanted. Oh, my word. But, you could have logos. Talk about flying logos.
Yeah, anything you want. But we have a pretty long list of power hitters who are going to be joining us. And, of course, it's co-sponsored by Comcast Business and Warner Norcross at Plus Judd. I'm going to get this right. They changed their logo. Tickets are still available, although they're going pretty fast right now. Of course, there's cocktails. There's going to be food and desserts. I mean, can't go wrong.
Sounds like a wonderful event. And now, where can they go to get the few remaining tickets that are there?
Well, you have to go to the website, which is iottechconnect.com, and there's a bunch of slashing going on that I won't go through. But
no, don't worry about that. We'll also post a link on our Internet Advisor page when we put the show notes up, so people can
see
that.
Yeah, that'd be simpler. They could just click on it, because you've got to go to events and then networking reception, and I don't want to get into all that. I know people are writing frantically right now. So,
well, don't bother with that, because we will have a link. You can simply go to internetadvisor.net and then click on that, and it'll take you to the site for the reception. But it does sound...
And, of course, all you guys are invited free of charge, even Ed, you know, so...
That's great. Gary, we invited him, but I'm sorry, he's too enamored of the 80-degree weather down there, right, Gary?
I think you actually should have a conference, you know, the Southern Conference should be held down there.
You'll host the Southern one. What's so big? Once you explain, Mike, just as, you know, the editor of MI Tech News, where you bring, you know, information about what's going on in the state in terms of technology and entrepreneurship, what is so big about IoT, the Internet of Things? And, Kasten, by the way, you're going to have a role there as well. Feel free to chime in. What's so big about that?
Yes, Kasten's going to be the moderator for all the cybersecurity panels, because, you know, my mantra, don't hook it up if you can't protect it, right? You know, so essentially everything is getting plugged into the Internet, whether it should be or not. And because it's ease of use, I mean, everything from the water power plants, water plants to the power plants and all that stuff in between is getting plugged in. So that's SCADA kinds of stuff. But I mean, it goes well beyond that. It goes into the connected tech, augmented vehicles, autonomous vehicles, that sort of thing. That device we all carry, the mobile phone, that's part of that whole thing.
Yeah.
And just more and more things are getting connected to it's like the Internet of Everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's really what it is. And so we're gonna have three workshops. We're gonna have five panels. One of the workshops is a STEM education workshop, because we're trying to bring more STEM students to get them interested in going into these careers, because we have, gosh, we've got a lot of jobs open around the state right now.
Lord,
we just can't
yes.
find people to fill, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Tanya Matthews, the CEO of the Michigan Science Center, is our mistress of ceremonies. And as next Wednesday, I'll be able to announce a very special guest, but I'm under instructions not to do so till next Wednesday.
All right.
But I think he will be a big draw. So
excellent.
You'll get to meet someone who's been instrumental in making technology big again in Michigan.
That's excellent to hear. Mike Brennan, of course, the editor of MI Tech News, thank you so much for stepping in here. And it sounds like it's going to be a great, good time had by all. It's going to be at the Troy Marriott, and that's on April the 4th.
Yep. Troy Marriott, which is at I-75 and exit 69. Can't miss it.
Right near Big Beaver. Okay. Hey, Mike, thank you so much for being here and for sponsoring this. We'll certainly be talking about it more. And again, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you will find links there that will take you off to finding out more about this great VIP reception coming up. Mike, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Foster. You guys, too.
Sit back and enjoy the Amazing Blue. Or the amazing, amazing blue. Hey, guys, it's been fun being here. We're going to get people used to this time with all of our guests. Gary Baker down in Florida. We have Cal here. Ed Riddell is off today. Excuse me, and Kasten Thomas, thank you for stepping in here. And don't forget, folks, that this is a time you could come in with your questions about your computers, your printers, whatever else it may be. And as a bonus for you, there is a whole other hour of the Internet Advisor that's available on our podcast. And you'll find that if you go to our website, internetadvisor.net, and they'll be there on Sunday night. Kasten, have a great week.
Glad to be here, and everybody have a great week.
All right, Cal, it's good to have you off the ice and with us.
And I'll be back next week as well.
All right. Looking forward to have you. Gary, you take care, Captain Bly.
Hey, I'll try to send some warm weather your way.
All right. Thank you so much. And for the rest of you folks out there, thanks so much for tuning in here to the Great Voice of the Great Lakes. And be sure to tell your friends that we're here Saturday nights, ready to answer your questions about your computers or anything else that you've got that taps into the Internet. My name is Foster Brown, and thank you to Eric Dortch for engineering our program here. Have yourself a great Saturday night.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show.
Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.